So let me start with a couple of simple things. First, you know, I thought things couldn't get a lot worse when George Bush's father was president. This George Bush is making his father look pretty good, isn't he? We have such important work to do in this country. I think there's a fundamental divide between George Bush and most of America. And if I were describing it, this is what I would say. He honors and respects really one thing and one thing alone. And you know what it is.
Money.
You got it. And he wants to make sure that those who have it, exactly. And that they're, most importantly, that they're part of an exclusive club where they're protected. The barriers are up and the doors are closed and no one else ever gets in. Well, I would argue that's the result of where he comes from. Most of us come from a very different place. I certainly come from a different place. My grandmother was a sharecropper in South Carolina, had 6th, 7th grade education. My dad worked in a mill all his life. He has a high school education. I was the first person in my family to be able to go to college. And after I worked my way through college and law school, spent almost 2 decades representing working people in courtrooms against big insurance companies, big drug companies, big HMOs. And I'm proud of the work I did for them. And then I carried on the same work when I went to the United States Senate. But if you grow up the way most of us grew up, instead of honoring and respecting money and wealth, what we honor and respect is hard work and responsibility and opportunity and fairness for more people. You know, that's really what we're about. We want this circle of opportunity to be wider, for more people to be included. And if you just think about it for a second, I don't know how many of you saw this, but George Bush had an economic summit down in Crawford, Texas, while he's been on vacation. Now, I don't know how many of you saw that. And there, this may be news to all of you, by the way. They all told us that we're actually in an economic recovery right now. They just say it's a jobless
economic recovery.
Well, I don't know about where this president comes from, but where I come from, if you don't have a job, you don't have a recovery. And I don't know what in the world he's thinking about. And by the way, the best way for us to have a real economic recovery is make sure that George W. Bush gets a new job in 2004. That's the best way to have a real economic recovery. George Bush and corporate responsibility, what do you think? Yeah, exactly. A little hard to put those in the same sentence, isn't it?
Just a moron.
I think if I turn y'all loose, you're going to handle this by yourself. What about No Child Left Behind? What do you think? No Child Left Behind? Yeah. Here's the truth. I'm on the Senate Education Committee. This president is leaving millions of kids behind every single day. Every day. He's underfunding his own education plan by $10 billion. And actually, worse than any of that, he never talks about what I think is the biggest problem in our public schools today, which is that we still have two public school systems in most of America, one for the haves and one for the have-nots. When you live in an affluent community, the odds are your child can get a pretty good public school education. But if you don't, the odds go down dramatically. What is this president going to do about it? Nothing. The reason is it is nothing but a political issue for him. Well, this is personal for me. I'd have no chance of being here today without a great public school education, without great teachers along the way. Here's what I want to do as President of the United States. First, lead a national initiative to pay teachers better so we get good teachers in the teaching profession and we keep the teachers that we already have. You can clap for that. That's fine. Second, I want to give bonus pay to teachers who are willing to teach in areas that are more disadvantaged. Right now, the incentive is just the opposite. We need to give a real incentive to our best teachers to go to the schools where we need them the most. We ought to say to young people, if you'll commit when you're in college to teach in a school in a disadvantaged area when you get out, we'll pay for your education. We'll give you a scholarship. We need young people in these schools. We ought to be investing in early childhood programs. We're a place where I think actually we can have the most impact on the lives of young people. We ought to be investing in after school. Now, my wife and I have had some personal experience with this. We helped start 2 after-school programs in North Carolina. My wife, Elizabeth, worked over there full-time the first couple of years. The first one was open. I saw the effect it could have on the lives of young people. They just, you know, they need a place to go where they're off the street and productive and they're not getting in trouble. Well, this president had an answer for them.
What he's proposing is that we cut 500,000 after-school slots. 500,000 kids who lose their after-school program because of this president. We have thousands of young people across America who are qualified to be in college. They should be in college, but they're not going. Why aren't they going?
No money.
Exactly right. Well, the president has an answer for it. Cut funding for Pell Grants for college kids. Cut funding for financial aid for college kids. Cut funding for college loans. I have a different answer. Very simple. This is what I call it. College for everyone. I say if you're a young person qualified to be in college, and it's a big and, you're willing to work for it, at least 10 hours a week the first year you're in school, you ought to be able to go tuition free to a state university or a community college. I want every young person in America, that was the first person in my family to go to college. I want every young person in America to have the same chance that I have. And I'll tell you something from my own personal experience. The work will not hurt them. It won't hurt them a bit. You know, I had a lot of jobs when I was in college. One was unloading tractor trailer trucks. You spend a summer night in North Carolina unloading a tractor trailer, you'll get up and study the next day. Works every single time, I promise you. And then finally, a subject that all the Washington crowd says I shouldn't be talking about on the campaign trail, but I do everywhere I go. And then it's particularly heightened today, given a visitor that you had to the state of New Hampshire. Let me say this very simply and plainly. You know, I don't take a bath. I should say this to everybody, especially those of you who haven't met me or seen me before. If what I'm about to say bothers you, you probably should be for somebody else, because I will not quit talking about it. And I am going to stand up on this issue when I am President of the United States. Let me say it very simply. I don't take a back seat to anybody on what needs to be done to keep America safe. But in this effort to protect ourselves, we can't forget what it is we're supposed to be fighting for. So in this effort to protect ourselves and fight this war on terrorism, we cannot let people like John Ashcroft take away our rights, take away our freedom, and take away our liberty. And I understand the Attorney General was here touting the Patriot Act today. Well, here's the problem. There are problems in the Patriot Act. There are problems with the administration of the Patriot Act. This Attorney General is engaged in conduct that most Americans, if they knew about it, would be horrified by. You know, the very idea that we have agents going to find out what library books people are checking out, to find out what books are being bought in bookstores, data mining about people on the Internet, and what about the whole notion of labeling an American citizen something called an enemy combatant, arresting them on American soil, putting them in prison, keeping them there indefinitely. They don't never see a judge, never see a lawyer, never see anybody, and never even get a chance to prove that they're innocent. Is this America? This is not America. This is not what we believe in. It violates our most fundamental values. And so I thank you all for being here. I think these issues are all very important. But the truth of the matter, and there are in fact other issues which I hope we get a chance to talk about. We haven't talked about Iraq, which I have ideas about, I'd love to talk about. But any other issues that you're interested in, we're going to talk about right now. But I want to say this. This election is about more than any single issue. It's about what kind of America we are. It's about what kind of America we want to be. And there is a cause here. The cause is to get the power in our democracy out of the hands of that handful of insiders that are running our country today, and to give it back to you, to give it back to the American people. I believe in an America where the family you're born into and the color of your skin should never control your destiny. I still believe in an America where the son of a mill worker could beat the son of a president for the White House. Thank you all very much for being here. Questions, please. Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to talk about the elephant that in standing in the corner that no one's looking at. Given the fact that we are in Iraq, whether you are for or against it in the past, we are there.
We are.
What do you see as your vision as a leader of the United States for our future position in Iraq?
Well, tell me your name again.
Mike Morrison.
Mike, yes, Mike. Mike asked about, as the leader what is your position about the future of Iraq, what we should be doing, and can I also take that and put it into a bigger context about what I think America's role in the world is? Let me answer Iraq specifically first. I think that what we should be doing is bringing the United Nations in, both for humanitarian relief and to help with setting up the transitional government. We should bring NATO in to help with providing security. We should bring our other friends and allies, including the European Union, in to help pay the cost of what's happening in Iraq right now. I think all of those things would, number one, relieve some of the responsibility that now is on our troops. Number two, relieve some of the financial burden from the American taxpayer. And number three, and I think over the long term, maybe the most important, help reestablish positive relationships between America and the rest of the world. Here's what I think. I mentioned it very briefly earlier. I believe that we are, as everyone knows this, we're the most powerful nation on earth now. There's an enormous responsibility that goes with that power. And that responsibility includes treating other nations with dignity and respect. And so we ought to solve, it doesn't mean we shouldn't lead, we should identify problems that exist around the world and lead in a multilateral, coalition-building way that brings the power of the world to solve the world's problems, as opposed to America alone trying to solve the world's problems.
Do you see our rule in Iraq lasting for decades?
No.
As in a Marshall Plan that would rebuild and recreate the government? Or what do you see in the future outside of the short term?
Sure. Here's what I think. I think that, first I've told you what I think we should be doing in the short term. And I think this has to be an international effort as opposed to what it is now, which is an American occupation, basically. And I think the test for Iraq is not what's happening right now. The test is 5 years from now.
Exactly.
5 years from now, will we still be there? Are the Iraqi people governing themselves? Are they actually seriously on the road to democracy? I mean, because if we actually had a democracy in that region of the world in an Arab country, it's a big thing.
It's huge.
And it's a big thing. I mean, Israel is the only democracy in that part of the world right now.
Exactly.
And it would be a big thing. So I think, you know, what you're right. Whether you agreed with going there or not, we're there now. That means we can't just walk away.
Exactly.
But I do believe that this should be an international effort, and this should, as quickly as possible, the governing of the Iraqi people should be turned over to the Iraqi people. I think we should do, along with others, do what we can to help get them going again, get their economy stimulated, and then put them on the right path. That's basically, and I think that ought to be done in the course of single years, 2, 3, 4 years. I don't know how long it'll actually take, and we don't know yet. Yeah, you like to get another question.
That's more of a comment. I just don't think it's possible to do that
in less than
10 years.
Oh, I think it can be done in less than 10 years.
Oh,
you mean without American involvement?
Yeah, I see it more like the way we were in after World War II, where we, in order to stabilize a demolished economy, we had to stay and help those people rebuild. We had
in terms of American involvement, what did you, maybe we're just talking past each other. I'm talking about a long-term presence of significant number of American troops. That's really what I was focused on.
Well, we've been in Germany since the end of World War II, 1945. France had the guts to kick us out, and a couple other people.
But I think if that happens in Iraq, we're running completely counter to what... I should go answer these other people's questions.
No, sorry.
I think it runs counter to what it is we're trying to accomplish there. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have a presence, but the kind of presence that we have now over an extended period of time, I think is counterproductive. It's not... It creates an enormous... That's the reason, if you meet with our military leaders right now, they will be the... Now, I'm not talking about political people. I'm talking about our military
leaders.
The first thing they will tell you is... This has to be an international force as quickly
Absolutely.
As possible. Because if it's not, there's this huge anti-American hostility on the ground there right now. Let's you and I talk about this later.
Good question.
Thank you all very much. Thank you for being here.
What did I learn tonight?
I'm just here to listen. I'm just hoping that one of them will stand out by the time I have to vote in the primary. That's really what I'm here for. I think I'm beginning to change a little, and that's what primaries are good for in New Hampshire, right? That you get to see the candidates firsthand, and so you get to talk to them about the issues. It's really almost like small-town government. That's what happens in New Hampshire.
I want to get a better idea of how you would have treated the situation in Iraq before. You know, now that we're there, obviously we can't leave a vacuum.
H-O-L-M-E-S.
But what should we have done before? Would sanctions have worked? Are sanctions an effective sort of tool for foreign policy?
They're not. I don't think they're generically an effective tool. I think they can be very effective. Let me talk about North Korea. There's an example of something going forward. In North Korea, what I think we should be doing in North Korea right now is we should be at the table with the North Koreans. Direct negotiations. I think that if we were engaged with them in a positive way, I don't think it happened quickly. I'm not naive about it.
Yeah.
But I think we have something they want. They need economic aid. They need food. They need medicine. They need us. And they are dangerous. They're the most dangerous thing on the planet for America right now. Not only because they have nuclear capability. One of the things, oddly enough, that I think is the least concern is they'll attack us directly. I think the greatest concern is they're the biggest proliferators on the planet. They have a long history of it. And the idea that they're going to be continuing to develop nuclear weapons and the potential for and they need money.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the way I would describe it to the American people. The last thing in the world we need is to drive the North Koreans out into the marketplace to sell their nuclear capability because they have to. They don't have any choice. We should be engaged in negotiating with them. I am certain that we could reach an agreement that gave us absolute the ability to verify, the ability to make sure that, you know, they've got sort of two parallel nuclear weapons programs going on, one using these 8,000 rods that we've lost control of, and the other a uranium-based program. We have to get control over both in order to know what's going on. But that's what I would do. I think all these problems, I don't mean to sound so nuanced, but I do think it is important that we don't just wait to see what others do. We have to lead. I mean, we are the people look to America for leadership. We have to lead. But leadership is not, you're not leading when you're not leading anybody. When you just go off yourself like George Bush does and do exactly what you want to do, and you know this already, but, you know, and this all started way before September the 11th. It was Kyoto. Remember, he disengaged unilaterally from Kyoto. He did the same thing on the Biological Weapons Convention, same thing on the international courts, same thing on a whole group of nuclear non-proliferation agreements. All those were mistakes.
What about the ABM agreement?
Same thing. Hey, it's just the list goes on and on. And all of it says this is every bit of that says to the rest of the world, we're going to do what we want when we choose, and we don't care what you think. You want me to sign this for you? What's your name, pal? Trevor?
Yeah. I hope you'll be president.
Thank you, sweetheart.